Police picked up Michael Altenberger within hours of a devastating fire that took the lives of 25 people in an apartment building in Los Angeles on November 16, 1973. Altenberger, who was only 18 years old, waived his right to counsel and was interviewed by investigator Michael O. Lambert and Sergeant Orozco at the Rampart Police Station. Altenberger was then taken to the LAPD headquarters and given a polygraph test. The polygraph examiner, a veteran of the LAPD, concluded that Altenberger failed the test and he was charged with murder. Lambert took Altenberger back to Rampart. At the police station, Lambert put Michael Altenberger in an interview room. After 10 minutes, Lambert emerged from the interview room and told his supervisor that Altenberger confessed to arson and murder. Lambert used police tactics and trickery to elicit a confession. This confession was enough evidence for Michael Altenberger to be indicted for 25 counts of murder and one count of arson. The only problem was the 18-year-old's confession was not true. Welcome. My name is Lydia Riva. I'm a criminal defense lawyer practicing in Toronto, Canada. In my podcast, we discuss all aspects of the criminal justice system, from investigation to the courts to corrections, from the lens of the defense. In this episode, we will talk about the use of police deception in obtaining statements, whether it is legal in Canada for police to lie to suspects and witnesses, and the role deception plays in false confessions. This is For the Accused. Officer Lambert told his supervisor that Michael Altenberger confessed that he set the fire because he wanted to kill his mother. Lambert's supervisor sent Lambert back to the interview room to record the admission. "Hi, Mike," Lambert said. "Kind of tired, huh?" Altenberger had not slept for more than 38 hours. He had trouble remembering what he had said before. "Okay," said Lambert, "but you remembered that that's why you set the fire, because you wanted to kill your mother." "Yes, sir," said Altenberger. Stanley Matheson of the Special Trials Division of the Public Defender's Office represented Altenberger at his preliminary hearing before Justice Antonio Chavez. The main prosecution witness was Investigator Lambert. In cross-examination, Matheson focused on the lies that Lambert told Altenberger during interrogation. "Now, you told Mr. Altenberger, did you not, or asked him, whether or not some matches on the desk were his when he emptied his pockets? Isn't that correct?" Matheson said. Lambert agreed. Matheson then asked, "You knew those weren't Altenberger's, did you not?" "Yes, that is correct." "Did you tell Mr. Altenberger that a lady had seen him running away from the scene of the fire?" "Yes, I did." "You knew that wasn't the truth, did you not?" "That is correct." At the end of the preliminary hearing, Justice Chavez ordered Altenberger to stand trial on 25 counts of murder and one count of arson. But he said, "Were I the trier of fact on what has been presented here, there would be great reasonable doubt in my mind. But I'm not the trier of fact, and that is a standard I, as magistrate, cannot hold." The next day, the supervisor of the LAPD investigation, Joe Goodman, the prosecutor, Stephen Kay, and the district attorney, Alex Acosta, approached Altenberger's public defender, Matheson. They wanted to release Altenberger from jail to verify his story. Nothing he said would be used against him if it didn't check out. Matheson agreed if he could come along. On February 9, 1974, Altenberger was released from custody. The DA said to Altenberger, "You direct us and we will go anywhere." Altenberger took them on a tour of his whereabouts on the date of the fire. They confirmed details of his story. Kay, Goodman, and Acosta determined he could not have set the fire at the Stratford apartments. 87 days after his arrest, Altenberger was exonerated and released. On February 11, 1974, at the prosecutor's request, the indictment against Altenberger was dismissed. After his release, police never arrested anyone else for the apartment building fire in Los Angeles. Public defender Matheson pointed out during Altenberger's preliminary hearing that the fire in the Stratford apartments might have been accidental. The full account of the Altenberger case can be found in True Stories of False Confessions, edited by Joe Warden and Stephen Drizin. The book reprints John Kendall and William Farr's riveting article in the LA Times' Stratford Arson Case 18-Year-Old Ordeal, How Justice Won Out, March 24, 1974. In the preface of their eye-opening book, Warden and Drizin write, "False confessions are amazingly common." You might ask yourself how a person can do something that is so against their self-interest. One factor that contributes to false confession is when investigators lie to the suspects about the evidence, like in the Altenberger case. The technique convinces the suspect that they must have committed the crimes. In his thorough and informative 2016 book, How the Police Generate False Confessions, James Tranum, a retired officer from the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, writes that the hardest type of confession for people to understand is what he calls the internalized confession, where the person believes they committed a crime even though they have no actual memory of doing so. Tranum writes that memory manipulation is not that hard. He points out that there have been experiments that prove that fictional events, even criminal fictional events, can be planted into a person's memory of their childhood. Tranum says that suspects that respect and trust law enforcement in general seem to be more susceptible to making this type of confession. I started the podcast with a true story that happened in California with the LAPD in 1973. But is this type of police deception legal in Canada now? Can a police officer lie to a witness or to a suspect during an interview? It's a long-standing rule of common law that only voluntary statements to police officers are admissible in a criminal trial. The Crown has the burden of proving voluntariness beyond a reasonable doubt. In the year 2000, the Supreme Court of Canada considered the common law limits on police interrogation in another arson case. During the police investigation of 8 fires, Richard Oikle agreed to a polygraph. At the end of the test, around 5 p.m., the police officer conducting the test told Richard Oikle that he had failed it. At 6:30 p.m., a second officer questioned Mr. Oikle, and after 30 to 40 minutes, an emotionally distraught Oikle confessed to setting the fire to his fiancée's car and provided the police with a statement. Mr. Oikle was arrested and warned of his rights. At the police station, he was placed in an interview room where he was questioned about the other fires. Around 8:30 p.m. and 9:15 p.m., Richard Oikle said that he was tired and wanted to go home. Police informed him that he was under arrest and could call a lawyer, but that he could not go home. At 9:52 p.m., a third officer took over the interrogation. He questioned Mr. Oikle till about 11 p.m. Mr. Oikle confessed to setting 7 of the 8 fires. He was crying with his head in his hands. He then gave police a written statement. He was placed in a cell to sleep at 2:45 a.m. At 6 a.m., a police officer asked Mr. Oikle whether he would agree to a reenactment of the crimes, which he agreed to do. The trial judge ruled on a voir dire that Mr. Oikle's statements, including the video reenactment, were voluntary and admissible, and subsequently convicted him on all counts. The Court of Appeal excluded the confessions and entered an acquittal. The Supreme Court of Canada concluded that the trial judge's determination that the confessions were voluntary should not have been disturbed on appeal. And accordingly, the Supreme Court of Canada allowed the appeal. Mr. Oikle's convictions were restored. The Supreme Court of Canada in Oikle had to decide whether the police improperly induced Mr. Oikle's confessions through threats or promises, an atmosphere of oppression, or any other tactics that could raise a reasonable doubt as to the voluntariness of his confessions. In Oikle, the Supreme Court addressed the issue of false confession. The Supreme Court discussed the false confession type, which the court called the non-coerced persuaded confession. The court explained that in this scenario, police tactics could cause the innocent person to, quote, become confused, doubt his memory, be temporarily persuaded of his guilt, and confess to a crime he did not commit. This is from Offshay and Leo's article, The Consequences of False Confessions, 1998. The Supreme Court of Canada explained, quote, the use of fabricated evidence can help convince an innocent suspect of his or her own guilt. It's important to remember that the Crown must prove beyond a reasonable doubt the voluntariness of a statement. The Supreme Court of Canada held in Oikel that to be found voluntary, a statement of an accused must be the product of an operating mind. It must not have been obtained by threats or inducements. It must not have been made in circumstances so oppressive that they vitiate the statement's voluntariness, and it must not be the product of unacceptable police tactics or trickery. It's the last criteria that I want to focus on here. What is unacceptable police tactics or trickery? In Oikel, the Supreme Court of Canada held courts should not unduly limit police discretion. The court said, quoting Justice Lemaire and Rothman, the authorities in dealing with shrewd and often sophisticated criminals must sometimes of necessity resort to tricks or other forms of deceit and should not through the rule be hampered in their work. What should be repressed vigorously is conduct on their part that shocks the community. So the Supreme Court does not rule out the use of police trickery or deceit, only deceit or trickery that shocks the community. As examples of what might shock the community, the Supreme Court suggested a police officer pretending to be a chaplain or a legal aid lawyer. To date, I've never done a case where a police officer pretended to be a legal aid lawyer. Can the police lie to a suspect? Yes, they can lie. They can use other forms of trickery and deceit. The trickery and deceit is limited by conduct that would shock the community. If the Altenberger case had been in Canada today, there would be a voluntariness voir dire at his preliminary hearing to determine whether his statement was voluntary beyond a reasonable doubt. If the law in Oikel applied, veteran public defender Matheson, no doubt, would argue that the circumstances of taking the statement was oppressive and fabricating that the matches came from his pocket shocked the community. He would have raised the fact that the police did not record all aspects of the confession. In this hypothetical, public defender Matheson could also call Altenberger to testify on the voir dire to raise a doubt. Altenberger would testify that the deception and sleep deprivation overbore his will and his statement was not voluntary. Prosecutor Kay could ask him in cross-examination whether or not his statement was true to go to his credibility on the voir dire. In this hypothetical, Justice Chavez would rule on the voluntariness of the statement. If Justice Chavez found that the circumstances were not oppressive enough to vitiate voluntariness, and that the police deception did not shock the community, and the lack of proper record did not raise a reasonable doubt about voluntariness, Michael Altenberger would still have been committed to stand trial for a murder that he did not commit. Police deception is a major factor in false confession. I think it is logical to conclude that if we eliminate or further limit the use of police deception in taking statements, we will reduce the instances of false confession and wrongful conviction. Another thing to think about, often when a prosecutor seeks to prove the voluntariness of an accused statement to admit at a trial, it is to expose lies that the prosecution believes the accused made. Even if not an outright confession, the prosecutor often wants to cross-examine the accused on alleged lies to advance their case. Sometimes covering lies and deception is part of or the motive for the alleged offense. I'm not sure police should use deception and trickery to capture and sanction deception and trickery. It's not just hypocritical. I think it can negatively impact the psychology of the players in the justice system and promote the exact thing society is trying to address. The Altenberger case also highlights what can happen when a suspect or accused person does not exercise their right to a lawyer immediately upon detention. Michael Altenberger waived his right to a lawyer. Perhaps he wasn't properly informed of his right to counsel. Maybe he thought he didn't need one because he was innocent, or he mistakenly thought he would look guilty if he called one. Had Michael Altenberger called a lawyer immediately upon detention, it might have prevented his 87 days nightmare. This is not to blame Michael Altenberger for the injustice. I simply want to point out that when a person is detained in police custody, they should exercise their right to speak to a lawyer. This applies to everyone. I will discuss the right to counsel in the next episode. Thank you for listening. Please listen to the next episode of my podcast and check out my website at rivalaw.ca. I am Lydia Riva, and this is For the Accused.